welcome to Tuned to Yesterday, bringing you broadcasts from radio's golden age. I'm your host, Mark LeVonier, and this hour, Mystery, later on, The New Adventures of Sherlock Holmes. But first, it's Box 13 with film star Alan Ladd and a Mutual Broadcasting System episode from June 5th, 1949, called Design for Danger.
Box 13, with the star of Paramount Pictures, Alan Ladd as Dan Holliday.
Box 13, care of Star Times. I need your help desperately. Johnny Tide was released from the state penitentiary this morning with murder in his heart. I don't know any of the details, but I'm sure that he'll be back here in Watertown by nightfall at the latest. If you mean what you say in your ad in the Star Times, be at the waterfront tonight.
Be at the waterfront tonight and stop him. Remember, if you fail, Johnny Tide will kill or be killed by morning. And that would be wrong because there's lots of good in him. I know. I love him. Janice Reed. Yeah, that's the way it started. Just a girl worrying about a boy. But before it was all over, a lot of people were worrying about that boy. They had to, if they wanted to live.
And now, back to Box 13 and Dan Holliday's newest adventure, Design for Danger.
Jeepers, Mr. Holliday. An ex-convict on the prowl in the toughest section of the city.
Uh-huh. That part of the city doesn't get the carriage trade, as the expression goes. Well, do we accept the challenge, Susie?
We? Oh, hey, I'm only your secretary, Mr. Holliday, and
I was using the editorial we, Susie.
Oh. Well, in that case, Mr. Holliday, I don't know what to say. Frankly, I'm trumped.
Susie, the word is stumped. The word is stumped. But maybe you've got something.
What?
I don't know. I'll tell you what. Suppose I go down to Watertown and nose around a little.
Why?
Oh, I don't know. Maybe to see what's doing. It was called Watertown not because it was a separate city, but because it was a separate and different order from the rest of the town. But tonight, there was none of the usual rowdy noises. None at all. Watertown was quiet. Too quiet. I could feel a peculiar tension in the air as I walked, as though Watertown was waiting for something to blow up. The people I saw hurried along, vanished into dark doorways and shuttered houses, afraid. A place like Watertown lives within itself, and news travels fast. Then I heard two men talking. I stopped. Stopped in the shadows and listened.
I know what I'm talking about, Fatty. Tide was sprung this morning, and he headed straight for here.
Maybe he ain't in Watertown. Maybe he'd be afraid to come back.
Oh, Johnny Tide, afraid of what? Of you, Fatty Ralston? You know he ain't afraid, and he ain't forgot.
Oh, shut up. You talk like I had to be afraid of Johnny.
Don't you have to be?
You guys make me sick. That punk's headed for someplace else. He ain't coming back to Watertown.
Well, just the same, if I was you, Fatty, I'd pull a blanket over me and hole up some.
Ah, go on, beat it. Get out of here.
You ain't afraid much. Oh, not much.
I ain't afraid of Johnny Tide. I ain't.
Why not, Fatty? Why should you be?
Who are you? What are you doing here?
I just wanted to ask you a question, Fatty.
You don't know me. I don't know you.
That's right.
Then run along and mind your own business, mister.
I've got business here. I just want to know, who is Johnny Tide?
You had your ears open, didn't you?
Yeah, wide open.
So you want to know who Johnny Tide is, huh?
That's right.
Oh, okay. You want it? Here it is.
I'll say this for Fatty. He was quick with his fist. By the time I got my breath back, I saw his 300 pounds disappearing around a corner. So if I wanted to know anything about Johnny Tide, Fatty was the boy to ask. I got up and followed. Saw him duck into a place that had a sign above it. Fatty's pool room. I slipped inside. Stepped into a dark corner and waited.
All right, everybody. Clear out. I'm closing up for the night.
What are you...
Look, Peter, you heard me. Look. Nobody owes me nothing. Now, that ought to make everything all right. Clear out. Come on.
Turning in early, aren't you, Fatty?
Well, you again. You don't learn lessons, do you?
I don't like the way you teach. Now you're going to tell me about Johnny Tide.
Was I? What makes you think that?
I had an idea you might.
Here's another idea with details, starting with this cue ball.
It's your window, Fatty.
Now, beat it. Stay away from me.
I asked you a question outside. I didn't like the way you answered it.
You a cop?
No.
Stay away from me. Stay away. My arm. Let go.
Sure. But who is Johnny Tide?
A punk kid, that's all. Anybody can tell you that.
I like the way you tell it. Come on.
Ease up, will you? That's my arm.
I know it is. It was my stomach outside.
Look, Tide's a punk kid. Just finished a 5-year stretch for sticking up my place.
This place?
Yeah. Yeah, he robbed me of $4,000.
$4,000? Try it again, Fatty. I doubt if you ever had $4,000 in this place.
That's what it was.
And why are you afraid? If he robbed you and served time, why should you be afraid now?
He said he'd get me. Well, let me go.
I'm sorry, Fatty, but your story doesn't make sense. In the first place, like I said, you never had $4,000. Not in this place.
You're smart, ain't you?
Just medium. But I can smell a bad story.
What's your stake in this anyway? Who are you?
An hour ago, I was just a curious bystander. I wanted to know who and what is Johnny Tide. But I took a punch in the midsection, and now you're telling me a lie. So that makes me more than curious. It gives me a personal interest.
Yeah. You let me go when I tell you?
It all depends. Go on.
All right. I'm only telling you because I got to get out of here before Johnny gets here.
Oh, so there is a reason for you to be afraid of him.
Maybe. But Johnny was framed. Rick Martin.
Rick Martin? The Rick Martin?
Yeah, big shot, boss of Watertown. He gave me $4,000, then he told Johnny I was a pushover for a stick-up.
Oh, and Rick Martin also told the police.
Yeah, he did. Johnny was framed, like I said.
Why should Rick Martin want to put that frame around Johnny Tide?
Because Rick liked the girl. So did Johnny.
So Rick took the easy way in love and war.
Now, let me go, will you? I told you everything. I gotta get out of here before Johnny comes.
You were in on the frame?
Maybe not exactly, but Johnny won't believe I wasn't.
You know, Fatty, somehow I can't blame Johnny for that. How did Johnny find out he was framed?
Somebody talked. Somebody that don't like Rick Martin.
Uh-huh. Now, is the girl Janice Reed?
Yeah, that's her. Johnny thinks she was in on the frame, too. Now, please, will you let me go? I gotta get out.
Yeah, sure, Fatty. You can go now.
I gotta go far away because Johnny Tide will go for Rick Martin and then me and then Janice Reed.
So that was it. Johnny Tide was coming back to settle old scores. But where was he? How could I help? I was thinking about it when...
No! Stop! Stop, you crook! You hoodlum! Stop! He did it. He broke my showcase window.
Who did?
That no good Johnny Tide. I saw him. He broke my window and took a gun.
So, now Johnny Tide had a gun. And he was close. Very close. But it was also out of my hands and into the hot little hands of Lieutenant Kling.
Now, look, Holliday. I know that Tide was released from prison this morning. I know that he's in Watertown tonight. I know he intends to kill Rick Martin before morning. But I also know that all of this, including that pawn shop he just knocked over, is none of your business. Now, do I make myself clear?
Yes, you do. But before I go back to my typewriter, one question. What do you know about a girl named Janice Reed?
Very little. Only that she's a singer over at the Blue Chip, Watertown's most exclusive nightclub. Now, anything else, Danny boy?
No, nothing else, Lieutenant. Good night. Maybe I made a mistake when I asked Kling about Janice Reed. Because up until then, I was convinced that the Lieutenant was right. I didn't belong in this mess. But now, well, I couldn't just step out and forget the whole thing. Not without talking to the girl, anyway. I got a table at the Blue Chip without too much trouble, and 10 minutes later, Janice joined me. She was younger, prettier, much more upset than I had expected.
Mr. Holliday, what have you found out about Johnny?
Well, rumor has it that he intends to commit a few murders tonight. Oh, and incidentally, you're on his list.
I don't believe that. Look, Mr. Holliday, I know Johnny. I grew up with him right here in this neighborhood. Why, Johnny and I and Tyler Bennett were inseparable. Please, Mr. Holliday, you've got to believe me.
Maybe I do, Janice. But let's start off slowly. First of all, who's Tyler Bennett?
My boss. He owns this place. He and Johnny and I used to play together as kids. Why, we even had a secret clubhouse under the pier. All that kind of stuff. And how Johnny loved it. You know, that kid used to climb the old water tower over the clubhouse every day and pretend to sight pirate ships on the horizon. He'd get mad if we said they were just barges.
Which adds up to what, Janice?
that Johnny was never really a bad boy, Mr. Holliday. He just craved excitement, that's all.
But what about Rick Martin? How do you explain that?
Well, Rick meant action and fast money. And Johnny liked both. He was young and he made a mistake, but he's paid for it. He served his time. Don't you see, Mr. Holliday, he needs help. He needs it badly.
You certainly got a lot of faith in him, Janice. But what about you and Rick Martin? Go out with him?
Once in a while. I have to keep my job. Don't forget, Rick Martin runs Watertown.
That might be hard to explain to Johnny Tide.
No, it won't. Believe me, Mr. Holliday, if you can find him, you can talk sense into him. I know that.
Well, I'm not so sure.
But you'll try.
Okay, I'll try.
Oh, thank you. Thank you so much.
Oh, pardon me, but you're on in a minute, Janice.
All right, Tyler. Oh, Mr. Bennett, Mr. Holliday.
How do you do?
Hello, how are you?
Excuse me, I'll only be a few minutes.
Janice was telling me how you two grew up with Johnny Tide, Mr. Bennett.
Oh.
Have any idea where he might be?
Well, if I did, I'd go directly to the police with the information. Johnny was a good kid once, but that was a long time ago. He's dangerous now. He's very dangerous.
Janice won't buy that.
I know. She was in love with him 5 years ago. She can't believe he's changed. But mark my word, Johnny Tide will kill before this night is over. I only hope he doesn't get to Janice.
When I left the Blue Chip, I knew that in spite of both Kling and Tyler Bennett, I was on Janice's side. Now, my only problem was to stop Johnny Tide, if I could find him. I walked around aimlessly for the better part of an hour before I got a break. I stopped to look up at the sky, and I found myself staring at the remains of a rotted water tower. For a moment, the jumble of old boards didn't mean a thing, but suddenly it struck home. Johnny Tide used to play pirate on that water tower, and there was a secret clubhouse below. It could be just the spot for a hideout. I felt my way through the blackness when...
You move one more step, fellow, and I blow your head off. Who are you?
My name's Holliday, Dan Holliday. I'm not a policeman, and I don't work for Rick Martin.
Your open is okay. I'll keep talking.
All right. Here it is. You're Johnny Tide, aren't you?
Maybe. Keep talking.
Well, Johnny Tide, you're the world's biggest sucker.
Yeah?
You waste 5 precious years in prison, and on your first day out with a clean slate, you get into a jam that'll either mean the chair or a pine box.
And what's that to you?
Personally, nothing. But I'm around because a friend of mine believes in you. A girl named Janice Reed.
Janice? You've seen her?
That's why I'm here, leaning against that .45 in your hand. Tide, why don't you get smart? That girl's in love with you.
But what about Rick Martin?
Oh, forget him. Sooner or later, the cops will catch up with Martin. They'll put him away for keeps.
Sure, sure. Meanwhile, what's to keep Martin and his boys from coming after me?
I'll do what I can about that. But to play it safe, why don't you get out of town, away from here for a while?
What's that? Holliday. Holliday, if this is a trap, you'll never leave here alive.
Then we've got a deal. Because that was probably a stray cat. Now listen to me, Johnny. Do what I say, will you? Forget Rick Martin. Get out of town for your own sake and for Janice.
Yeah, yeah, sure. Forget the whole thing. Forget I was framed and went up for 5 years. That's a long time, Holliday. An awful long time.
I know it, Johnny, but it's done now.
Yeah, done. Me with a record. You can't wipe that away.
Suppose we fix it so that everybody finds out about the frame.
How?
Well, first give me that gun. Then get out of town and let the police take care of Rick Martin. Fatty Ralston can be made to talk.
How?
He talked to me because he was afraid of you. He'll talk, Johnny. And when he does, that record of yours will be wiped off. Come on, now, what do you say? Well?
Here, I'm a sap. A gold-plated 14-carat sap, but here.
That's a good boy. Now go someplace where you'll be out of the way. You leave this to the police.
Sure. But so help me, Holliday. If I get another loop thrown around me, if anything slips... Johnny Tide will be back for you.
When I left Johnny, I was sure everything was going to be all right. I put his gun in my pocket and started up the street for Rick Martin's place. I wanted to be sure that Martin would let Johnny get out of town under his own power. I took a shortcut through an alley. Brother, how foolish can you get? I hadn't gone 10 feet when I heard footsteps behind me. I tried to duck, but I wasn't quick enough.
Uh-huh. Mr. Dan Holliday in his usual position after sticking out his neck. Come on, see if he can get up.
Oh, Kling, we ought to do something about these buildings around here. They fall on people.
Yeah, somebody slugs them.
You know, I gathered that.
And that isn't all you gathered.
Hmm? What are you talking about?
Three guesses. Just take only one. That's all you'll need.
I still don't know what you're talking about. But I know one thing.
And that is?
Don't worry about Johnny Tide anymore. I had a talk with him.
So you talk Johnny Tide into being a good boy. You let that fast-talking little... Holliday, while you were lying here asleep, Tide got to Rick Martin and killed him.
And now back to Design for Danger, another Box 13 adventure with Alan Ladd as Dan Holliday.
The moment Lieutenant Kling told me that Rick Martin was shot to death, I plunged my hand into my pocket for the .45 I'd taken from Johnny Tide. But it was gone.
Looking for this, maybe?
The gun.
Yeah, we found it next to Rick Martin's body. Holliday, you've been taken in by a fast-talking punk. Any way you look at it, your name spells sucker.
Yeah, you're right. Johnny Tide sang a pretty lullaby, and I went to sleep. But get this, Kling. Before the sun comes up, I'm going to plant Rick Martin's murder right in your lap. Well, sunrise was only 6 hours away, and that meant I had to move fast. I remembered Fatty's warning that he and Janice Reed would be next if Johnny Tide ever got to Rick. So I lost no time in getting to the girl's apartment.
What, Mr. Holliday? What are you doing here?
Rick Martin's just been murdered, Janice.
Yes, I know. Tyler Bennett called me a few minutes after it happened.
Look, Janice, that Johnny's off on a killing spree, and you and Fatty are next in line.
No. No, I don't believe that. Johnny isn't a killer.
Rick Martin wouldn't see it that way, Janice. Now, listen to me. I want you to lock this place up tight and stay under cover.
But I can't. I've got to be back at the club for the late show.
Call Tyler Bennett when it's time. He'll take care of you.
But where are you going?
To find 300 pounds named Fatty Ralston. It cost me a $50 bill and a lot of legwork, but I finally located Fatty out on an old oil barge anchored off the end of a deserted pier. So I took off my shoes, stripped to the waist, and quietly swam out to the barge. Once on deck, I could hear the voices of two men coming from the cabin. One of them was Fatty. I couldn't see the other man. I edged closer, and then I banged against the steel drum, and the noise it made shattered the silence. The light in the cabin went out.
Who's that? Come on, who is it?
Just an old friend, Fatty.
Huh? You again?
Let's go in the cabin, Fatty. I'm a little wet.
Sure. Why not? Come on.
Light the lamp.
Anything to oblige. See better now?
Not yet. Who was with you?
Nobody.
Where's Johnny Tide? I said, where's Johnny?
He ain't here.
Don't give me that.
Why don't you look around?
Put down that gun first.
You're mixed up, fella. I give the orders. I got the gun.
That's right. Give me a cigarette, will you?
I don't smoke.
No? Not even Egyptian cigarettes?
Huh?
This cabin's thick with smoke from Egyptian cigarettes.
Maybe you better go. Now.
Hand me that towel, Fatty. I'm a little chilly.
Here.
Thanks. Drop that gun, Fatty. Drop it.
Hey, hey off! You're breaking it.
Drop that gun. All right. Move back. Okay, now I give the orders. I've got the gun.
Listen, don't do nothing. Don't, please.
No, I'm not. I'm going to stand perfectly still and listen to you talk.
Okay. Okay, I'll talk. You see?
Whoever fired those shots couldn't have missed, Fatty. And whoever it was got off the barge and into the boat that was tied on the opposite side. I ran over. I slipped once on the oil-covered deck, and the motorboat made for the shore. I had to stand and watch Johnny Tide get away. Get away after killing Fatty. And that made two down and one to go. And the one was Janice Reed. I swam back, slipped into my things, got to a phone, told the police about Fatty. Then I headed for Janice Reed's apartment. It was dark, deserted. I found an unlocked window and got inside. and I had the sickening feeling that I was just one step behind Johnny tied in his gun. Then I knew it wasn't Janice. She'd use a key. I moved to the door quietly.
What the? Get your hands off me, Holliday.
Why, Mr. Bennett, I'm sorry. I thought you were Johnny Tide.
Obviously. I came to take Janice to the club. Where is she?
I don't know. I was just going through the place when I heard you at the door. Here, I'll switch on the light. Come on, let's look in the bedroom. Well, there's nobody in here. I guess I'm too late again. Wait a minute. This memo pad. Here, near the phone.
What about it? What does it say?
It's written with an eyebrow pencil. Pier 42 at 1:30. Sure, that girl's just crazy enough to keep a rendezvous with Johnny Tide. What time is it now?
10 after 1. Why? What are you going to do?
Maybe 3's a crowd, Mr. Bennett, but I'm going to be there when Johnny Tide and Janice get together. I'm going to...
What is it, Holliday? What are you staring at?
Look. They're on the rug. Those smudges. That's oil.
Oil? I don't follow you. What does it mean?
The Tide's been here already. Those are his tracks.
What?
Yes, you see, he was out on the oil barge an hour ago, and the deck was slick with that stuff. I know. I slipped myself.
Well, then, couldn't those be your footprints?
No, I left my shoes on the pier. I swam out.
But why would Johnny make an appointment with Janice and still come up here?
I don't know. Only Johnny can answer that. Just like he can tell me where he gets those smelly Egyptian cigarettes he smokes. I took a cab to within the block of Pier 42. Then I got out, walked quietly to the rendezvous spot. Janice was already standing in the soft light of a street lamp waiting. So I ran back to the phone and called Lieutenant Kling. But the girl set up like a clay pigeon. I didn't want to take any chances. When I got back to Janice, it was 1:30 on the button. And a second later, a man stepped from the side door of a warehouse. It was Johnny Tide. I moved closer as Johnny went up to Janice.
Johnny. Johnny, darling.
Hello, Janice.
Oh, Johnny, it's been such a long time.
Yeah. Yeah, 5 years. An awful long time, Janice.
What's the matter, Johnny? Aren't you glad to see me?
Sure. Sure, awful glad, Janice. Awful glad.
But what's the matter? Johnny, why are you looking like that?
I'm just trying to figure out something.
Oh, never mind now, Johnny. Look, you've got to get away.
Wait a minute. Listen. Cops. You did it again, didn't you?
Johnny,
you...
no.
I might have known. I was going to give you a chance to explain.
Johnny.
Now.
Hold it, Johnny.
Holliday, you.
She didn't call the police, I did.
I'll get both of you later. I'll be back. Yes, I'll be back.
Johnny. Johnny, don't run away anymore. Don't run away.
Holliday. Dan. You there?
Right here, Kling.
Where is he?
He ran into the warehouse.
Okay. Put a ring around that warehouse. Spotlight. Tear gas.
No. No, let him alone. Let him alone.
Okay, boys. Let's go.
I'm going with you, Kling.
Be careful. Come on.
No use, Johnny. The police are here. You're licked, kid. Come on, give up.
Not me, Holliday. Me and the law just don't seem to get along.
But, Johnny, it's your only chance. Will you give up? Answer me, Johnny.
You hurt, Dan?
Just in the shoulder a moment.
There he is, up there on that rafter. Kennedy, you're right, shine it up there.
There he goes, Lieutenant. Get
it. No, don't cling. Don't shoot.
Stay out of this. Are you crazy, Holliday?
Not quite. Kennedy, shine your light up behind you.
Yes, sir.
Up there. Higher. There. There's your man, Kling.
What? Well, who is that, Holliday?
That, Lieutenant, is the man who killed Rick Martin and Fatty Ralston and tried to frame Johnny Tide for the whole thing. The name is Tyler Bennett.
Well, Holliday, how are you this morning?
Oh, pretty good, Kling. The doc says I'll be out in a couple of days.
Good. Well, like you figured, the whole thing was a scheme of Bennett's to kill Rick Martin and take over as number one man in Watertown.
Yeah, and with Tide framed for the murder. Tyler Bennett would also have had a clear field with Janice.
And he was the one who knocked you out just before Rick Martin was shot, huh?
Uh-huh. He must have followed me from the blue chip to Johnny's hideout, where he heard me talk Johnny out of his gun. From there on out, he was in the driver's seat. But I still don't see why Bennett killed Fatty out on the barge.
Because Fatty was Bennett's sidekick in this frame. And when it looked as though you might get the truth out of him, Bennett was forced to shoot one of you. You were lucky. Fatty made a better target. But now I've got one for you. The jackpot question. When you were in the warehouse, how did you know that Johnny Tide was innocent?
Well, I found that out the hard way. You see, I was facing Johnny when I was shot in the back.
Gee, Mr. Holliday, you certainly had a long night in Watertown. But there's one thing I don't understand.
And what's that, Susie?
Why did Tyler Bennett follow you down to the pier?
Oh, he had to because of the oily footprints in Janice's apartment. You see, once I got to Johnny Tide and found out that he didn't have oil on his shoes, I would have realized the footprints couldn't have come from anyone but Tyler himself.
Oh.
Besides, I would have also found out that Johnny didn't smoke Egyptian cigarettes.
But what about Johnny? Now, I mean.
Oh, he's on probation for stealing the gun. Everyone knows he was framed for the other deal.
Gee, you know, Mr. Holliday, I wonder if I would have thought of that Egyptian cigarette thing. Nope, I guess I wouldn't.
Why not?
Because I don't know a single Egyptian.
Oh, good night, Susie.
Next week, same time, through the courtesy of Paramount Pictures, Alan Ladd stars as Dan Holliday in Box 13.
Box 13, untuned to yesterday from June 5th, 1949 on the Mutual Broadcasting System. This is an hour of mystery on Tuned to Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark LeBonier. Now, it's no mystery that the adventures of Sherlock Holmes were very popular on radio and the silver screen in the early to mid-1940s with Basil Rathbone and Nigel Bruce playing the leading parts. And in the same year of this next broadcast of the new adventures of Sherlock Holmes, the pair were featured in no less than three motion pictures based on the characters. This episode, called Murder by Moonlight, heard on the Mutual Broadcasting System on October 29th, 1945.
This episode from the life of Sherlock Holmes will be transmitted to our men and women overseas by shortwave and through the worldwide facilities of the Armed Forces Radio Service. Petri Wine brings you Basil Rathbone and Nigel Bruce in the new adventures of Sherlock Holmes. And now let's keep our appointment with the good Dr. Watson.
Come in.
Good evening, Doctor.
Good evening, Mr. Bartell. Come over here and join me by the fire.
I didn't think it was cold enough for a fire tonight, Doctor.
Oh, I suppose it isn't really, but there was one late, so I just couldn't resist putting a match to it.
Fire's a good accompaniment to storytelling anyway.
Yes, my boy, a fire and a glass of port. Care to join me in one?
Thanks, Doctor. So, you're going to tell us a sea story tonight.
Yes, Mr. Bartell. The whole adventure took place aboard a small steamer as it plowed through the stormy seas of the Indian Ocean. Here's your glass, my boy.
Thanks. And what were you and the great Sherlock Holmes doing on the Indian Ocean, may I ask?
We were on our way to Calcutta to solve the case of the vanishing elephant of Parbatipur.
Oh, yes, the story you told us a few weeks ago.
That's quite right, my boy. It's in the summer of 1894 that we left Liverpool aboard the steamship Lucifer. Wasn't a large ship, and as both the Mediterranean and the Red Sea proved somewhat, shall we say, unfriendly, I may tell you the first part of the voyage was quite unpleasant. In fact, until we left Aden, I'd spent most of the time in my cabin. I'm not much of a sailor, you know. However, as we headed eastward towards Colombo, the weather cleared up a bit, and I came on desk and joined Holmes. I remember on the second night out of Aden, we paced the decks together. The stars above us twinkled, the promise of a bright tomorrow. And the faint tinkle of a piano being played in the passenger lounge formed a perfect setting for an evening stroll. It only seems like yesterday that Holmes said...
Watson, it's good to see you on your feet again.
Yes, it's good to be on them, Holmes. It's been a miserable trip for me so far.
The captain told me tonight that we can expect good weather between here and Karabati, our next port of call.
I thought Colombo was the next stop. And where is Karabati, whatever you call it? Anyway, I never heard of the place.
It's a tiny island in the Indian Ocean. It's a British protectorate. Those are the only facts I was able to glean from the encyclopedia in the ship's library.
Did you ask the captain why we're stopping there?
No, I didn't. As we're traveling incognito, I felt it wiser not to ask too many questions.
I find this incognito business something of a strain. Every time a steward calls me Mr. Hamish, I can't think who on earth he's talking to.
Whereas I find myself answering to Mr. Mycroft almost automatically. By the way, old chap, now that you're going to mix with the ship's passengers, I suggest that you adopt a Scotch accent. It would seem more appropriate for a Mr. Hamish, and I don't want anyone aboard to suspect our true identities.
I'll do my best, but I must say, Holmes, I think you're being unnecessarily mysterious.
Possibly I've been influenced by reading too many of your rather florid stories of our adventures together.
My stories are not florid. They're all perfectly true.
Oh, don't be angry with me, old chap. Don't be angry, please. By the way, you'll be interested to know that I've unearthed a little mystery aboard this boat.
I trust you to do that. Where is she? I mean, what is it?
Oh, you observe that suite of cabins on the bridge deck above us?
Yeah? What about them?
Well, I've been watching them during my nightly strolls for the past 2 weeks. The suite is occupied, and yet the blinds are never raised. And I've never seen meals taken in there. I presume, therefore, that it must contain a private galley and a cook.
I don't see anything mysterious about that. It's probably occupied by some wealthy invalid.
Well, possibly, possibly. Another interesting fact is that the occupants are not entered on the ship's passenger list.
It all sounds very mysterious. There's probably a perfectly simple explanation for it. In any case, you must save your energies for the problem that awaits us in India. You're Mr. Mycroft now, remember that?
I will, Mr. Hamish.
Mr. Mycroft?
Yes, Mr. Hamish?
Would you care to join me for a wee drop of brandy in the smoking room?
Mr. Hamish, I shall be delighted.
Excellent brandy. Excellent.
Watson, you notice that rather garrulous gentleman over there in the corner?
You mean the one at the table with the oriental-looking fellow?
Yes, the talkative man is the ship's doctor, but I haven't seen the other gentleman before on this voyage.
I wonder if he's an occupant of the mysterious suite on the bridge deck.
Let's go over and talk to him, shall we? And remember the accent, Mr. Hamish.
And so, Verder, when we landed at Colombo, I decided to take Mrs. Abbott for a moonlight rickshaw drive from the cinnamon gardens. Did you gentlemen want to see me?
If you'll excuse us, Dr. Harris, my friend Mr. Hamish and I were having a little argument, and we thought that perhaps you might be able to settle it for
us. An argument? Oh, I love a good argument. Sit down, gentlemen. This is Mr. Verder.
How do you do, gentlemen?
Good evening, sir. My name is Hamish, and this is my friend, Mr. Mycroft.
I'm so happy to meet you, gentlemen.
Now, how do you know, Mr. Verder?
Now, gentlemen, tell me what you're arguing about.
Well,
I
Doctor,
love a good argument.
You see, it wasn't exactly an argument. My friend Mr. Hamish insists that the Suez Canal was built by a Dutchman in 1870. I'm convinced that it was built by de Lesseps, a Frenchman, in 1869. We thought you'd know.
You flatter me. I'm only a ship's doctor, not an historian. Ask Verde. He probably knows.
Can you settle the question for us, sir?
I can, Mr. Mycroft. You are almost correct. The canal was opened in 1869, though its construction began 10 years previously. De Lesseps, a French engineer, was in charge of the operation. There is a statue of him in Port Said Harbor, built to commemorate his skill and enterprise.
Oh, much obliged to you, Mr. Vera. Hamish, I think that I win my bet.
Aye, Mycroft, I'm afraid you do, if you're sure of your facts, Mr. Vera.
I'm sufficiently sure of them, Mr. Hamish, to venture a small wager myself.
No. I think I'll not make any more bets on the subject, thank you.
Well, gentlemen, if you will excuse me, I shall return to my cabin now.
Oh, don't go.
No, don't go, sir. You'll make us feel as if we'd driven you away.
Oh, not at all, Mr. Hamish. I enjoyed meeting you both, but I have some letters to write. Good evening, gentlemen.
He's a charming person.
Charming and extremely knowledgeable.
Bit of a bore, if you ask me. You two fellas enjoyed your trip?
I'm just beginning to. It takes a little time to get my sea legs, you know.
Dr. Harris, how long have you been on this ship?
4 years. This is my 23rd trip east on the Lucifer.
Uh-huh.
Why?
Well, there's something that puzzles me on board this ship. I'm sure that you would explain it to me.
And what is it?
Well, the suite of cabins on the bridge deck. Who occupies them?
Wouldn't you like to know?
Aye, Doctor, we would, and that's why my friend asked you.
Well, I'll tell you. Though it's supposed to be a secret. But there'll be no harm in telling you now, for we're dropping anchor off the island of Cavarati in the morning. In that suite of rooms is the Rani of Cavarati herself. She has her own staff of servants and everything. What do you think of that?
Oh, how very interesting. And is the Oriental gentleman who left the table when we arrived part of our entourage?
He is, sir. He's the sort of prime minister of Cavarati. This whole trip of theirs is very hush-hush. Rani returning to her country, afraid someone might make an attack on her life. Have to keep it all hush-hush. Cavarate is an island that's had a lot of trouble.
You seem to be remarkably well informed about the place, sir.
Yeah, I should be. I used to practice there in my younger days.
Really, how very interesting.
Yes, I could tell you strange tales about the island. I remember... Oh, hello. See that fella coming into the lounge?
You mean the big man with the grey hair?
Yes. That's Sir Christopher Wyatt. Owns all the tea plantations on Cavarate. He's a dull fella, but I'll call him over. Wyatt, come over and join us. Be careful. You talk your head off if you give him half a chance. Ah, draw up a chair, Wyatt. We were just talking about Cavarate.
It seems to me that would be a good subject to keep away from. At least till after tomorrow, Harris.
What do you mean?
You know perfectly well what I mean. I should have thought that after your own experience on Cavarate, you'd have learned a little discretion.
You're talking like a schoolmaster, Wyatt. Why don't you just sit down, have a drink, and be friendly?
Thank you. I prefer my own company.
Pompous ass.
You and Sir Christopher don't seem on the best of terms, Doctor.
I know too much about him. He's afraid of me. That's what he is.
Look at this girl coming into the room. Great Scott, she's good looking.
Judging by our Oriental costume, she must be a member of the Rani's retinue.
She's coming to our table. Yes, my dear. What is it?
Which of you gentlemen is Mr. Mycroft, please?
I am.
My mistress sends her compliments and asks that you will call on her in her suite.
And who is your mistress, may I ask?
Her Highness, the Rani of Cavarate.
Oh, I shall be delighted. Please tell the Rani that I shall pay my respects without delay. We will join her in a few minutes.
Very well, Mr. Mycroft.
You know, Holmes, this is pretty exciting. The girl that just brought us the message was a stunning creature. Imagine what the Rani herself must be like.
Oh, what an incurable romanticist you are, Watson. I suppose you picture the Rani clad in oriental splendor, reclining like an odalisk on silken cushions.
No, no, no. There's no need to make fun of me, old fellow.
Here we are, the cabin.
Ah, it is you, gentlemen. Follow me, please. Her Highness, the Rani of Cavarate.
All right, Regina, you can off it.
Yes, Your Highness.
Well, any lads, don't look so startled. Come in and sit down.
Your Highness,
What's the matter? What's the matter? Don't I fit into your picture of a Rani? What did you expect? A slant-eyed beauty with a veil and big hips? Well, I've got the big hips, all right.
Your Highness,
mind the Your Highness. Sit yourselves down and talk free and easy like. I may as well begin by telling you that I know who you both are. Mr. Sherlock Holmes and Dr. Watson.
Dear me.
I've seen you in the good old days in London, you know.
May I ask if our visit is purely a social one, or are you in need of professional advice?
Oh, a little of both, Mr. Holmes, a little of both. And we'll start off with being social. Bruma.
Mem Sahib.
Champagne.
Botachi, Mem Sahib.
If you'll pardon my asking you, madam, but haven't I seen you before somewhere?
Oh, that's a question I'm always having to answer. Yes, you probably have, Dr. Watson. You see, I was in the chorus at Daly's Theatre in London for quite a few years until the Rajah of Cavarate decided I'd look better on his island than I did in front of the footlights.
Your husband, the Rajah, is dead, isn't he?
Yes, he was killed playing polo.
Champagne, ma'am, side.
Cola. Champagne, please, sector.
Atcha.
He doesn't speak English, so I'll get along with telling him my troubles. Mr. Holmes, somebody's trying to kill me.
Kill you? Good God.
May I ask what reason you have for saying that, madam?
You may, Mr. Holmes. Before I left England, I had threatening letters warning me that if I ever went back to Cavarate, I'd never get to the island alive. I got another letter in Port Said that said the same thing.
You kept these letters, I trust?
No, I didn't. I tore them up. I never did pay any attention to letters that weren't signed.
Well, that's a great pity, madam. Those letters might have been invaluable.
Well, it's too late to think about that now, Dr. Watson. Here's what's on my mind. I land at Cavarate in the morning, and if anyone's up to a bit of no good, tonight's their last chance.
You destroyed the threatening letters, madam, thereby indicating that you did not believe in the threats, and yet you now appear to feel that you are in danger. I wonder what made you change your mind.
The Ace of Spades.
Yes? I don't understand you, madam.
In the last 2 days, every time I tell my fortune, I get the Ace of Spades. Now, you know what that means. Death.
Oh, come now, madam. If you'll pardon my saying so, that's a very childish superstition.
Well, the cards have never lied to me yet. Oh, you can laugh at it if you like, but I know.
Well, do you mind if I ask you a few questions?
Anything you like, Mr. Holmes. Fire away.
How long is it since you were in Kabarati?
About 18 months. We were in England when my husband died, and I couldn't face the idea of going back to that island alone. In 3 months ago, Verda... Oh, he's the chief minister of Kabarati.
Yes, 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 madam. We met him for a moment in the lounge.
Oh, well, Verda came over to England to persuade me it was my duty as the Rani to go back.
I see. As far as you know, have you any enemies among the passengers on board the ship?
Oh, that's an odd one to answer, Mr. Holmes. But I can tell you right here in my suite there's someone who doesn't like me. That girl, Raduna, the one that brought you my message. She was in love with the Roger herself. I know she hates me, even though she did stay with me in England after my husband died.
How about Ferda, your minister?
Oh, he's all right. My husband thought the world of him, and he's been wonderful to me.
He came from Kavarati recently, you say, to persuade you to return there.
That's right, Mr. Holmes. Well, Bruma seems to be all right after drinking that champagne, so it'll be safe for us to have some now. Champagne on log cable?
But that's your mem side.
Oh, I've been burning with curiosity to know why you gave him a glass of champagne a few minutes ago, and yet we... didn't have any.
Well, surely that's obvious, Watson. Fuma is the official poison taster, isn't he, madam?
That's right, Mr. Holmes. He tastes everything I eat or drink before I do. And if it doesn't affect him, then I know it's safe. Verda brought him over to England when he came to fetch me. On the island of Kavarati, poisoning's quite an arbor, you know.
There were two people in the smoking room tonight who seemed to know quite a lot about your island. The ship's doctor, rather... garrulous gentleman by the name of Harris and Sir Christopher Wyatt, who owns tea plantations on the island. Do you know either of them, madam?
I should say I do, both of them. Dr. Harris isn't any good. He was on the island for a bit, but he got into some kind of trouble, and my husband had him thrown out.
And how about Sir Christopher Wyatt?
Oh, Chris is all right. I saw quite a bit of him in London after my husband's death. As a matter of fact... Well, if I weren't going back to Kavarati, I don't think he'd be on the boat at all. He hasn't been there for over 5 years, ever since he had a row with my husband over the wages he paid the native labor.
It seemed to me that several people aboard this boat have a personal interest in the island of Kavarati. Interests that might be influenced by your death.
Yes, just what I was going to say, madam. I think we should keep an eye on you.
Oh, that's just what I was hoping you'd say, Doctor. You see, I'm giving a bit of a supper party tonight. All the people we've been talking about have been invited. And I thought if you two were to be here, perhaps you'd be on the lookout for any funny business. How about it?
Well, of course we'll come, won't we, Holmes?
I think it might be a good idea, though I would suggest that we retain our incognitos as Mr. Hamish and Mr. Mycroft.
Well, whatever you say, Mr. Holmes. And now, let's have that champagne.
You know, Holmes, I remember the Rani when she was in the chorus at Daly's. She looked stunning in tights. There was one night I...
Yes, no, I'm old chap, if you don't mind. At the moment, there's a question I want to ask you.
Oh, sir?
Is your medical bag fully equipped with all the antidotes to poison?
Poison? It's ridiculous. How could the Rani be poisoned when she has a poison taster?
My dear Watson, you mustn't...
Hello! Help!
What the blazes is...
Come on, Watson. That cry came from the companionway.
There are two figures struggling by the rail there.
Good heavens! One of them has pushed the other down the companionway.
Oh!
Good Lord. His skull smashed in. I'm afraid that he...
What's happened?
Sir Christopher Wyatt. What are you doing here?
I was taking a stroll. I heard a yell from this direction and came here as fast as I could. Great Scott, this fellow's bleeding badly. We must get the ship's doctor at once.
That's hardly necessary, I fear, Sir Christopher.
What do you mean?
In the first place, this man is dead. In the second place, he is the ship's doctor.
Now, Dr. Watson, tell us what happened next. You said you found the ship's doctor dead at the foot of the companionway?
Yes, Mr. Bartell. His neck had been broken instantly.
Imagine there was a good deal of excitement aboard.
No, my boy, as a matter of fact, there wasn't. We managed to get the body back to its cabin without attracting attention. Holmes, after revealing his true identity, was able to persuade the captain to hush up the killing until after the Rani's party had taken place.
Well, he didn't want to scare the murderer, I guess. What happened next, Doctor?
Holmes and I returned to our cabin to dress for the party. Holmes, I remember, was in a state of suppressed excitement. He spoke quietly and deliberately.
Watson? Surely it's obvious why the doctor was murdered.
Well, it isn't obvious to me.
It's elementary, my dear fellow. If you're planning a subtle murder by poison, how wise to remove the one man who might save the victim's life, a doctor.
Oh, you keep harping on poisoning. It seems to me that it would be the last way a murderer would try to dispose of the Rani. Everything she touches is first tested by the poison tester.
Exactly. That's why I call it a subtle murder attempt. Didn't you notice the physical attributes of Pruma, the poison tester?
Which in particular, huh?
His unusually glossy hair, his remarkably clear complexion, his plump figure. Look here. Just tell me one thing, will you?
What's that?
I presume that in your medical bag you have a supply of magnesia.
Naturally.
Do you also have hydrated ferric oxide?
Yes, I do.
Splendid. Let's be off to the party.
Oh, funny things to take to a party, I must say.
That's true, my dear fellow, but I'm afraid that this party may not prove as convivial as the Rani thinks.
Holmes, it's nearly 1 in the morning. Everything seems to be going splendidly.
It seems to be, Watson, but keep your eyes on the Rani.
Yes, I have been. The poison testers tested everything that passed her lips. We, Doc and Doris, to you, Sir Christopher. You having a good time?
Yes, indeed, thank you, Mr. Hamish. How about you, Mr. Mycroft?
Oh, the Rani's a perfect hostess. Who could help having a good time?
I don't think that girl, Regina, should be here, though. I don't want to be pompous, but after all, she's only a glorified servant.
Oh, possibly the laws of etiquette are not so strict in Cavarati as they are in London, Sir Christopher.
Oh, perhaps you're right. But I don't trust the girl. There's something shifty about her. I've told the Rani more than once. Oh, well, I suppose it's none of my business. I think I'll try and persuade the Rani to sing one of her old songs.
Yeah, he doesn't trust Raduna, and I don't trust him. I don't think it was an accident that we found him near the body of Dr. Harris.
Shh. Here comes Vera.
I trust you gentlemen are enjoying yourself.
Very much, Mr. Vera, thank you. I imagine you must be excited at the prospect of returning to Calavati.
I am, Mr. Mycroft. Though I only left it 3 months ago, it has seemed more like 3 years.
Do you ken what time we'll arrive there?
I am told that we shall be there in 5 hours, Mr. Hamish.
Oh, look. The Rani's at the piano. She must be going to give us a tune.
Yes, let's move a little closer, shall we?
Chris here has asked me to sing something. Well, my voice isn't what it used to be, and don't I know it. But me spirit's the same, and that's enough to put a number over. So hold tight, boys. Here we go. My sweetheart's the man in the moon. I'm going to marry him soon. 'Twould fill me with bliss just to give him one kiss, but I know that a dozen I never would miss. I'll go up in a great big... Oh.
Great Scott, she...
Quick, Watson, your medical bag. I'll lock the doors.
Right, your Holmes.
Bring some water, please.
Help me. Oh, please, help me.
What is the matter?
Don't be frightened, madam. I'll take care of you.
Thirsty. Give me water. Oh, such pain.
All the symptoms of arsenic poisoning. Now I know why Holmes asked me if I had any magnesia and ferric oxide.
Do something for me, doctor. I'm dying.
Don't worry, Your Highness. You're not going to die. She's going to live, Holmes. Ah, gracious me, I'm tired. It was touch and go there for a while, though.
Well done, Watson, old chap. Well done.
Now that she's out of danger, why can't we all go back to our cabins? It's nearly dawn, and we've been locked in here since 1 o'clock. You've no right to do this, you know.
Possibly not, Sir Christopher, but there's a murderer in this cabin, and I don't intend to let him escape.
Mr. Holmes, what happened? How could I have been poisoned when Fruma tasted everything first? Why wasn't he poisoned?
For a very simple reason, Your Highness. The murderer has been conditioning Fruma for over a year.
What do you mean?
He's been feeding him gradually increasing doses of arsenic until he has finally become immune to the poison.
Great Scott, I never thought of that.
Fruma's glossy hair, his complexion, and stout figure are all typical of a person who consumes arsenic regularly.
But who could have done it?
Only one person had the opportunity.
Well, tell us who that person is.
No, not you, Sir Christopher, not you. For you haven't been on the island for years, whereas Fruma returned from Calavati but 3 months ago. Raduna has also been in London with her mistress for the past 18 months, remember? The answer is obvious.
You did it, Verda. You brought the taster over when you came to fetch me.
You'd prepared him for the year beforehand.
Of course I did. No white runner will ever rule over Cavaratti.
And you murdered Dr. Harris.
Equally true. Mr. Holmes, give me the key to the door, please.
Of course.
Oh, no.
What?
Do not come near me. Please throw it on the floor. Do not hesitate. You see this revolver? I should have no compunction in using it, I assure you.
How do you expect to escape, Vera?
The key, please. Thank you.
You'll never get away with this, Verda, you devil.
But I shall. We are now in the harbor of Cavaratti. I shall swim ashore and arrange your welcome, my dear Rene. Turn your backs, please. Turn them. Thank you. Goodbye.
He's gone.
Come on, Watson. After him. You have your revolver, Watson?
Yes, but I didn't get a chance to draw it. He had me covered.
Well, draw it now, old fellow. Aim for a leg or an arm and don't hesitate to shoot.
There he is, up on the lifeboat. He's clambering up on the rail.
Where is he? Where did he go?
Out there on the rail above us, madam. He's going to dive.
Give me that revolver, Dr. Watson, quick. That's it. Come down off there, Verda.
Fools, meddlers, keep out of my affairs.
There he goes. He's dived.
Ah! Madam, you shot to kill.
Of course I did, Mr. Holmes. Remember that we're now in Cavaratti waters and that I, though I may not look like it at the moment, I am still the Ronnie of Cavaratti.
The New Adventures of Sherlock Holmes on Tuned to Yesterday from the Mutual Broadcasting System, broadcast on October 29th, 1945. And that does it for this hour of mystery on Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great programs from radio's past. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark LeVanier. Thanks for listening.